Reaching into your community, the Great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.
You're listening to The Space Show with Andrew Rennie. In 2010, President Obama offered a budget for fiscal year 2011 that proposed to cancel the Constellation program that was developed under the administration of President George W. Bush. The primary goal for the Constellation program was a manned return mission to the moon. There was also a long-term goal of a manned mission to Mars. After a review, Obama cancelled Constellation and instead set the primary human spaceflight goal as a manned mission to an asteroid. In 2010 April, I was present at the Kennedy Space Center as President Obama sought to outline and justify the difference in his approach.
There are also those who've criticized our decision to end parts of Constellation as one that will hinder space exploration below low Earth orbit. But it's precisely by investing in groundbreaking research and innovative companies that we will have the potential to rapidly transform our capabilities, even as we build on the important work already completed through projects like Orion for future missions.
He pledged to continue development of a new manned spacecraft called Orion.
In addition, as part of this effort, we will build on the good work already done on the Orion crew capsule. I've directed Charlie Bolden to immediately begin developing a rescue vehicle using this technology, so we are not forced to rely on foreign providers if it becomes necessary to quickly bring our people home from the International Space Station. And this Orion effort will be part of the technological foundation for advanced spacecraft to be used in future deep space missions.
Obama also announced the development of a new large rocket.
We will invest more than $3 billion to conduct research on an advanced heavy lift rocket, a vehicle to efficiently send into orbit the crew capsules, propulsion systems, and large quantities of supplies needed to reach deep space. In developing this new vehicle, we will not only look at revising or modifying older models, we want to look at new designs, new materials, new technologies that will transform not just where we can go, but what we can do when we get there. And we will finalize a rocket design no later than 2015 and then begin to build it. And I want everybody to understand that's at least 2 years earlier than previously planned. And that's conservative, given that the previous program was behind schedule and over budget.
That rocket is now in development and has the inelegant name Space Launch System, or SLS. It will be able to place 70 tons into orbit. In his 2010 speech, Obama explained the historic trajectory that brought the United States to the point where it faced major decisions. Obama began with the launch of Sputnik 1 in 1957 and the shock this had on the Eisenhower administration.
President Eisenhower signed legislation to create NASA and to invest in science and math education from grade school to graduate school.
When the Soviet Union orbited the first man, Yuri Gagarin, in 1961, President Kennedy had this response.
In 1961, President Kennedy boldly declared before a joint session of Congress that the United States would send a man to the moon and return him safely to the Earth within a decade. And as a nation, we set about meeting that goal, reaping rewards that have, in the decades since, touched every facet of our lives.
Speaking with a mock-up of the new Orion capsule behind him, Obama injected a personal anecdote.
And on a personal note, I have been part of that generation so inspired by the space program. 1961 was the year of my birth, the year that Kennedy made his announcement. And one of my earliest memories is sitting on my grandfather's shoulders, waving a flag as astronauts arrived in Hawaii. For me, the space program has always captured an essential part of what it means to be an American. Reaching for new heights, stretching beyond what previously did not seem possible.
Obama recognized that in 2010 the situation was different from that facing Kennedy in 1961.
So today I'd like to talk about the next chapter in this story. Now, the challenges facing our space program are different, and our imperatives for this program are different than in decades past. We're no longer racing against an adversary. We're no longer competing to achieve a singular goal like reaching the moon. In fact, what was once a global competition has long since become a global collaboration. But while the measure of our achievements has changed a great deal over the past 50 years, what we do or fail to do in seeking new frontiers is no less consequential for our future in space and here on Earth.
Under current planning, NASA will launch an unmanned Orion crew capsule on a Delta IV Heavy rocket this December. The test is called Exploration Flight Test 1. Rising from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, the capsule will go into a high-altitude elliptical orbit around the Earth before returning to the ground. Its aim will be to validate various systems, including Orion's heat shield, avionics, and parachutes. Another Orion is scheduled for launch into circumlunar orbit in 2017 December. This unmanned mission will be lofted by a new rocket called the Space Launch System, or SLS. This seven-day 2017 mission will be unmanned and is called Exploration Mission 1. Their aim is to both test the compatibility of the new rocket and the Orion capsule and the ability of the Orion heat shield to withstand a high-velocity re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere. The first manned mission for Orion and SLS is planned for 2021. Various proposals have been made for this mission, called Exploration Mission 2. One timid idea is to do an Apollo 8-type mission, out to the moon, orbit it for several weeks, and then return to Earth. An even less adventurous suggestion is a flight to the International Space Station, a mere 400 kilometres above the Earth. A much bolder idea is called the Asteroid Retrieval Mission. An unmanned tug would fly out into interplanetary space, capture a small asteroid, and tow it into an orbit near the Moon. The Orion crew would rendezvous with this tug craft, dock with it, and gather samples of the asteroid. They would then return to Earth to conclude a 21-day mission. Since this concept was announced, it has failed to gather much industry support or public attention.
We expect new spacecraft designed for long journeys to allow us to begin the first ever crewed missions beyond the moon into deep space. We'll start by sending astronauts to an asteroid for the first time in history.
Even Blind Freddy can see that this mission is too ambitious for the first manned flight of Orion. Still less would it be achievable by 2021. Not only would Orion need to be prepared for its mission, the asteroid capture spacecraft would have to be built, launched and flown out into the solar system to capture the asteroid, then tow it to a parking orbit near the Earth. Even the optimists at NASA are now saying that the asteroid retrieval mission could not be flown until 2025 at the earliest. James Ruther is the Deputy Associate Administrator of Programs in the Space Technology Mission Directorate at NASA headquarters. A few weeks ago, he was asked by a reporter on the timing of the asteroid redirect mission.
What's the anticipated timing of the redirect mission? Again, understanding that it might be over multiple years, I guess, not knowing just yet, but approximately when do you expect the mission to occur to enable the follow-on, you know, human missions? And
trying to think of this in terms of when we want to be able to rendezvous with such an asteroid. We'd like to be able to do that by 2025 in that time frame. That, of course, will be determined by the selection and availability of the suitable asteroid and its redirection into the Earth-Moon system. And then, so that will be sort of the ultimate goal. Then somewhere in front of that, obviously, we'll launch the asteroid redirect mission, the robotic mission. And when we would launch that, will, again, be determined in part upon what asteroid we want to rendezvous with. But then on the other side, how long it takes us to formulate and develop that mission. So that is a little bit indeterminate. It'll be settled in the MCR timeframe. But you could look for that, in the FY19, FY20 timeframe, again, depending on how these architecture studies comes out. But the end game, the goal to actually be able to rendezvous with an asteroid, with humans in the Earth-Moon system, we're aiming for the 2025 timeframe.
Recently, another proposal has been mooted for the 2021 mission. Under current Obama and NASA planning, a trip to Mars would not occur until the 2030s.
By the mid-2030s, I believe we can send humans to orbit Mars and return them safely to Earth. And a landing on Mars will follow, and I expect to be around to see it.
Dennis Tito, a wealthy businessman who was the first tourist in space, has advocated a bold new plan for the 2021 mission. It would make use of a planetary alignment that occurs every 15 years. A spacecraft could be launched from Earth in 2021 November, fly past first Venus in 2022 April, and then Mars in 2022 October, before returning to Earth in 2023 June. Total mission duration would be 600 days. By using the gravitational pull of both Venus and Mars, this mission could be accomplished in a year less time than a Mars-only trip. Needless to say, this proposal has ruffled a few feathers at NASA and generated much industry and public debate. This debate caught the attention of the politicians on Washington's Capitol Hill. They called a hearing into the matter at the end of February this year. Top of their list of questions was whether sending the new Orion spacecraft all of the way to Venus and Mars on its first manned mission was feasible, let alone wise. In the briefing notes for the hearing, they referred to this part of Obama's 2010 speech. By the way, in addition to myself, Moonwalker Buzz Aldrin was in the audience.
I understand that some believe that we should attempt a return to the surface of the moon first, as previously planned. But I just have to say, pretty bluntly here, we've been there before. Buzz has been there. There's a lot more of space to explore and a lot more to learn when we do. So I believe it's more important to ramp up our capabilities to reach and operate at a series of increasingly demanding targets while advancing our technological capabilities with each step forward. And that's what this strategy does. And that's how we will ensure that our leadership in space is even stronger in this new century than it was in the last. It's an effort that will help prepare this already skilled workforce for new opportunities in the space industry and beyond.
The hearing of the Science, Space and Technology Committee of the House of Representatives was titled Mars Flyby 2021, the first deep space mission for the Orion and SLS? The hearing would explore the need for a roadmap of missions to guide investments in NASA's human spaceflight programs. Secondly, it would ask how a manned mission to fly by the planets Venus and Mars, launching in 2021, might fit into a series of missions. Thirdly, it would investigate how the Space Launch System and the Orion Multipurpose Crew Vehicle could contribute to that mission. The opening statements were made by Republicans Lamar Smith and Stephen Palazzo. Smith represents Texas and is chairman of the committee. Palazzo, a Mississippian, is chairman of the Space Subcommittee.
The Committee on Science, Space, and Technology will come to order. Welcome to today's hearing entitled Mars Flyby 2021, the first deep space mission for the Orion and Space Launch System. At a fundamental level, space exploration, the mission of NASA, is about inspiration. This inspiration fuels our desire to push the boundaries of the possible and reach beyond our own pale blue dot. For years, I have heard countless stories of how NASA inspired students to study math, chemistry, and physics, and adults to become scientists and engineers. However, some of these same people now feel that NASA no longer inspires them, their children, or grandchildren. mankind's first steps to the moon are a distant memory. And with the retirement of the space shuttle, NASA now is paying Russia $70 million per seat to transport American astronauts to the International Space Station. There's a sense that America is falling behind, with our best days behind us. Today, America's finest spaceships and largest rockets are found in museums rather than on launch pads. Regrettably, the Obama administration has contributed to this situation. Within a few months of taking office, the president canceled NASA's plans to return astronauts to the moon. And in its place, the president proposed a robotic and human mission to an unnamed asteroid. NASA's own advisory group on asteroids derided this plan and said, quote, it was not considered to be a serious proposal, end quote. At a hearing before this committee, all of the witnesses questioned the merits of the proposed mission. While consensus on Capitol Hill might be hard to find, there is general agreement that the president's asteroid retrieval mission inspires neither the scientific community nor the public who would fit the bill. So what is an inspiring mission? Maybe a journey to Mars. The red planet has long intrigued mankind. And a Mars flyby with two astronauts on board NASA's Orion crew vehicle could use the space launch system that NASA is developing. This flyby would take advantage of a unique alignment between Earth and Mars in 2021 that would include a flyby of the planet Venus. This alignment minimizes the time and energy necessary for a flyby. Under the 2021 proposal, a trip to Mars would take roughly a year and a half instead of 2 to 3 years. We are not the only nation interested in extending humanity's reach into the solar system. One of the three major spacefaring nations will reach Mars first. The question is whether it will be the United States or China or Russia. Great nations do great things. President Kennedy's call to the nation wasn't just about reaching the moon. It was a reminder that we are an exceptional nation. We must rekindle within NASA the fire that blazed that trail to the moon. The future of this nation's exploration efforts lead to Mars. The first flag to fly on another planet in our solar system should be that of the United States. NASA, the White House, and Congress should consider this Mars flyby mission proposal. It will focus NASA's energy and talent over the next decade, and most importantly, it will inspire our nation. I'm going to yield the remainder of my time to the chairman of the Space Subcommittee, the gentleman from Mississippi, Mr. Palazzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for holding this hearing today. The future of human space exploration is one that is personal to me. As other spacefaring nations expand their programs and look to destinations such as the moon and Mars, I consider American leadership in space as a matter of national pride, but also national security. This committee has been consistent in its commitment to human exploration. Yet over the last decade, the human exploration program at NASA has been plagued with instability from constantly changing requirements, budgets, and missions. We cannot change our program of record every time there is a new president. My subcommittee and this full committee passed a NASA Authorization Act last year that calls on NASA to develop a stepping stone plan to Mars. We must ensure that future exploration endeavors lay the groundwork for an eventual human landing on Mars. This committee must also maintain strong support for the next generation deep space vehicles, the Space Launch System and Orion crew capsule. I visited Marshall Space Flight Center, which is leading development of the SLS rocket, and I've had the opportunity to see SLS engine tests firsthand at Stennis Space Center in my own backyard in South Mississippi. I believe we're on the right track, but we must remain budget-focused and mission-vigilant. I look forward to hearing what our witnesses have to say today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I yield back.
And thank you, Mr. Palazzo. And if there is no objection, I'd like to put in the record a letter from Explore Mars expressing their support for a short-term flyby mission to Mars to be, as I say, put in the record. And if there is no objection, so ordered. And now I'll recognize the gentlewoman from Texas, the ranking member of the full committee, Ms. Johnson, for her opening statement.
Good morning. I see that the hearing title asks the question, Mars Flyby 2021. The first deep space mission for the Orion and Space Launch System. The question, given that 2021 is currently the estimated date for the very first crewed mission of Orion, period, not just its first deep space mission? I would guess that the likely answer will turn out to be no. I doubt that a flyby of Mars will ultimately be considered to be an appropriate first shakedown of flight for new crewed spacecraft, given the risk involved in a year and a half trip to Mars and back. However, I think this hearing does provide a good opportunity to again stress that we need a clear, thoughtful roadmap for our nation's human exploration program. Successive NASA authorizations acts have made clear that Congress believes that Mars is an appropriate goal for our nation's human spaceflight activities. It's time for NASA to tell us how they intend to achieve that goal. What technologies will be needed? What sequence of intermediate destinations should be pursued, and why? And what are the risks that will need to be addressed? We also need to hear from NASA about the progress being made on the Space Launch System and the Orion, the two systems that are critical to our exploration efforts beyond low Earth orbit. What are the challenges they're facing? How will they be used to support NASA's roadmap to Mars? And are they being adequately funded to meet the milestones laid out for those two programs? Mr. Chairman, NASA has not been invited to participate in today's hearing. That is unfortunate. I would urge you to schedule a follow-up hearing with NASA so that we can get a status report on the Space Launch System in Orion, as well as hear that what NASA is doing to develop a strategic roadmap for human Mars exploration. We need to hear from NASA if we are to properly assess its human exploration program and the funding that will be proposed for it when the President submits his budget request to Congress next week. It will also be relevant for this committee as we move forward on our reauthorization of NASA. Our nation's human exploration program can inspire our youth, advance our technological capabilities, and support our geopolitical objectives. However, it can only do those things if we are willing to keep our commitment to the dedicated men and women of NASA and elsewhere who are working hard to carry out the challenging tasks we ask them to undertake. As a National Academies panel has observed, and I quote, "There's a significant mismatch between the programs to which NASA is committed and the budgets that have been provided or anticipated. The approach to and pace of a number of NASA's programs, projects, and activities will not be sustainable if the NASA budget remains flat. As currently projected, this mismatch needs to be addressed if NASA is to efficiently and effectively develop enduring strategic directions of any sort," unquote. The long-term goal of humans to Mars, if properly pursued and supported, will inspire, will spur innovation, will promote international cooperation, and will advance science. In short, it is a goal well worth investing.
On this evening's The Space Show, we are considering a proposal to launch an Orion spacecraft with a crew of two in 2021 on a 600-day flyby mission of Venus and Mars. We are at a hearing held earlier this year at the House of Representatives. The first witness before the committee was Scott Pace, the director of the Space Policy Institute of George Washington University.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Ranking Member Johnson, for providing this opportunity to discuss the topic of a strategic framework for U.S. human spaceflight, and specifically the opportunity of a human flyby and return to the vicinity of Mars in 2021, which is only 7 years from now. A primary challenge to creating a practical and sustainable program of human space exploration is not the lack of ambitious goals, but the difficulties in organizing a practical sequence of projects and achieve larger strategic objectives. We also know the space agency budgets are under great fiscal and political pressures, and funds to build a large human-capable lunar lander, much less support human landings on Mars, are unlikely in the next decade. Fortunately, the debates of recent years and a literal alignment of the planets provides an opportunity to bring together several major programs, destinations, and policy objectives into a sustained effort of human space exploration. As you'll hear, a sequence of affordable human space exploration missions could begin with Orion and SLS flights to cislunar space, followed by a manned flyby of Mars taking advantage of the 2021 alignment and the SLS. The 2018 window, of course, for Mars is even more favorable, but the SLS and other necessary capabilities are unlikely to be ready in time. Following a Mars flyby and the demonstration of the ability to reach Mars with humans that is feasible, the U.S., international, and private partners could begin a series of human and robotic lunar missions in the 2020s, phasing in as the ISS reaches the end of its operational life. These missions would build operational experience and demonstrate the technologies necessary to eventually land humans on Mars. The international consensus in places such as the International Space Exploration Coordination Group has coalesced around cislunar operations as the next logical step beyond the ISS. There are many cooperative ventures that we could talk about. But the Mars flyby mission serves as an interesting bridge, potential bridge, between where we are with the ISS, where we would like to be with Mars, and where our international partners and commercial opportunities are with human space flight beyond low Earth orbit. This approach that we're describing, I believe, is consistent with the national space policy and congressional direction. In a constrained budget environment, it allows major program elements to be phased in affordably. Conducting a Mars flyby in 2021 with a schedule firmly dictated by orbital mechanics would drive near-term program planning and decisions on how to rationally trade costs, schedule, risk, and performance goals. We need a vision and a strategy to be a preeminent spacefaring nation. As many know, I've argued for taking a more geopolitical and international approach focused on the moon. NASA has rightly said it doesn't have the funds for a lander right now. The White House has wrongly said that it's uninterested in the moon and has failed to connect the dots, in my opinion, of an exploration strategy that serves broader national interests. A Mars 2021 human flyby would, as I said, provide a kind of a bridge, bringing together Mars and lunar communities, and in many ways may offer a faster and more efficient way of returning to the moon. Much more detailed programmatic planning is urgently needed with respect to a 2021 deadline for human flyby. Cost estimates, risk assessments, architectural trades are needed to see whether programmatic phasing and peak funding requirements are indeed feasible and supportable. And if borne out, the Mars 2021 flyby should become a top priority for NASA's human space exploration activities after the safe operation of the International Space Station.
Scott Pace referred there to the use of a Mars flyby in 2021 as a driver of space efforts. Obama had recognized the need for program drivers in his 2010 speech.
At the same time, after decades of neglect, we will increase investment right away in other groundbreaking technologies that will allow astronauts to reach space sooner and more often, to travel farther and faster for less cost, and to live and work in space for longer periods of time more safely. That means tackling major scientific and technological challenges.
Retired General Lester Lyles made his first appearance on The Space Show in 2004. He was a member of President George W. Bush's Moon, Mars, and Beyond Commission. And we covered those hearings in full over the years following 2004. That commission was charged with charting the path towards human flights to Mars. Now an independent aerospace consultant, Lyles has some recommendations on technology development.
Mr. Chairman, Congresswoman Johnson, and members of the committee, I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today on the issues concerning the nation's human spaceflight program. The Aeronautics and Space Engineering Board has not specifically addressed all of the questions that you're interested in this particular hearing. However, we've done a lot of things, I think, that touch upon the key elements and key concerns and opportunities associated with going to Mars, associated with space exploration, and certainly associated with the Mars flyby opportunity. In 2012, specifically, the Aeronautics and Space Engineering Board, the NASA Research Committee, and the National Academy itself completed reviewing a series of NASA space technology roadmaps. We provided NASA with what we consider to be a very comprehensive list of technologies that need to be addressed if there was going to be any chance of getting to Mars, even in the year 2030, 2020 time frame. We provided that to NASA. They embrace it, as I understand, and our recommendations for a technology roadmap are the underpinnings for the current technology programs that NASA is embarked upon. Those technology roadmaps indicated that there are several high-priority technologies that require further development in categories such as radiation mitigation for human spaceflight, environmental control, life support systems, space propulsion, et cetera. It was a very, very comprehensive activity conducted over a year and a half time frame, and again, it underpins most of the technology programs that NASA is currently embarked upon. Relative to the Mars flyby task and that we're specifically looking at here, in my personal opinion, the Inspiration Mars proposal provides, I think, an exciting opportunity for our space exploration program and certainly for NASA. It certainly is one that would provide vision. It addresses many of the concerns that each one of the studies I participated in was concerned with, including technology and technology maturation. But in my opinion, and based on my experience, 35 and a half years in the Air Force, mostly developing space systems or high technology systems, it does have high risk associated with it. Scott Pace just described some of the things that need to be addressed, looking at costs, looking at risks, looking at technologies. But to me, it's something that needs to be addressed, and I think it fits in some respects with both the current space policy and certainly with the things that were addressed in the studies that I touched upon.
In his 2010 speech, President Obama recommended specific and achievable milestones by 2025.
And unlike the previous program, we are setting a course with specific and achievable milestones. Early in the next decade, a set of crewed flights will test and prove the systems required for exploration beyond low Earth orbit. And by 2025, we expect new spacecraft designed for long journeys to allow us to begin the first ever crewed missions beyond the moon into deep space. We'll start by sending astronauts to an asteroid for the first time in history.
Doug Cook thinks that this didn't go far enough. The former NASA Associate Administrator in the Exploration Systems Mission Directorate is now the owner of Cook Concepts and Solutions. Rather than specific goals, he thinks America needs an overall strategic plan before it considers possible missions in the 2020s.
Thank you, Chairman Smith, Ranking Member Johnson, and members of the committee for this unique opportunity to discuss with you the exceptionally important need for a space exploration roadmap and specifically how a human Mars flyby mission in 2021 contributes to long-term exploration goals. It is long past due for the United States of America to have a cogent, meaningful plan for human space exploration. At a time when there is so much potential to make significant progress, I am more concerned than ever about the future of human space exploration due to the current void in long-term direction. We are, in my opinion, in dire need of a strategic plan consisting of logical goals supported by tactically placed specific missions that lead to a landing of astronauts on Mars. Logically sequenced missions should address science, exploration, and other objectives. International collaboration is essential, but the United States must lead. Capabilities and technologies should be developed incrementally and paced with available budgets. Every mission undertaken and every capability developed should contribute to long-term exploration objectives. Investments in current NASA human spaceflight programs are important, providing a balanced and solid foundation for human space exploration, including the International Space Station, crew and cargo transportation to low Earth orbit, and the Space Launch System, heavy lift rocket, and Orion capsule. These are the critical building blocks of an exploration infrastructure. Additional enabling capabilities, technologies, and research, including advanced in-space propulsion, space radiation research and protection, cryogenic fuel storage, closed-loop life support systems, spacesuits, entry, descent, and landing technology, and others should be the focus of NASA technology programs. First, we need a long-term roadmap that can gain traction through debate and refinement by stakeholders and advocates of the various approaches. Beginning with a human Mars Venus flyby mission in 2021, a unique mission opportunity with a free return trajectory made possible by the exact Earth-Venus-Mars planetary alignment. It is the least complex mission profile for reaching the Mars vicinity. The next comparable flyby opportunity is not until 2033. The mission provides an opportunity for an incredible first step that will make travel to Mars real to the people of the world, demonstrating previously unimaginable possibilities in the span of a few short years. The essential capabilities for such a mission are an SLS vehicle with a fully capable upper stage, a habitat with an advanced life support system, and an Orion capsule with an advanced heat shield. A human mission to a large asteroid in its own orbit would be achievable with these same capabilities. The most logical next step for the 2020s are missions to our own moon. Spacefaring nations, including China and Russia, are all very interested in the moon. Astronauts would collect samples in high-priority locations already identified by scientists to learn about the history of the sun, Earth, and solar system. They will employ surface operational techniques and test systems in the hostile lunar environment that will prepare for future human Mars surface operations. After initial lunar missions, Mars moons Phobos and Deimos become logical destinations. Missions will require efficient propulsion, possibly through evolution of solar electric propulsion technology used today, nuclear electric propulsion, electric plasma engines, or nuclear thermal propulsion. Astronauts will be in close proximity to Mars for a period of weeks, harvesting science samples and operating robots on the surface with minimal communication delays. A mission to Phobos and Deimos would inspire and prepare us for ultimate landing of crews on Martian surface. A human landing to Mars will require a large lander capable of atmospheric entry, surface habitat, nuclear surface power, a lightweight spacesuit, a rover, and other assets. Human missions to Mars will be challenging and tremendously momentous as astronauts explore the planet most like our own. Through logical progression and meaningful missions, I believe Americans will be motivated to support appropriate but reasonable budgets that are commensurate with the value of the plan and the work needed to accomplish it. We cannot afford to delay or prolong the debate because timing is critical to catch unique planetary alignment that makes the first step possible in 2021. NASA should seriously consider these concepts and challenges and objectively examine how they can be accomplished. With a long-term plan, we can provide our youth and the rest of the world a future marked by technological progress and discovery that will inspire all to higher aspirations. In the process, we will regain U.S. leadership in space exploration with a cadence of achievements.
However, to be fair to Obama, he did say this in 2010.
Now, 50 years after the creation of NASA, our goal is no longer just a destination to reach. Our goal is the capacity for people to work and learn and operate and live safely beyond the Earth for extended periods of time. Ultimately in ways that are more sustainable and even indefinite. And in fulfilling this task, we will not only extend humanity's reach in space, we will strengthen America's leadership here on Earth.
Sandy Magnus is a former astronaut. She is now executive director of the influential American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. She pointed out to this congressional hearing that Kennedy had laid out a goal, not a strategic plan. Magnus also noted that high political turnover in Congress made setting and following such a plan difficult.
I was asked to address the importance of having an exploration architecture and strategic framework to guide NASA's investments in space. In order to understand how important this is, I think we need to examine the trajectory of human spaceflight program over the previous decades. As we all are very well aware, President Kennedy's famous speech to Congress on May 25, 1961, challenged the country to land a man on the moon and return him safely to Earth within the next decade. Even though Kennedy's proposal was a noble goal, it was just that, a goal. Underlying that goal was neither a long-term strategy nor vision, let alone political consensus for how or what the U.S. should do in space. And because of this, the U.S. space program has since suffered. In the absence of a long-term strategic vision, we instead planned and executed short-term tactical goals outside of a larger defined stable framework. And this is the operational mode we are still working under today. So what has been at the heart of the problem of identifying and committing to a consistent national long-term strategic plan for the United States space program? Unfortunately, I believe that part of the problem is buried in human nature and our difficulty as humans in focusing in general in the long term, and coupled with our inherent short-term attention spans is the federal government that turns over at least a fraction of its governing structure every 2, 4, or 6 years, and the barriers to a long-term consistent strategy become painfully apparent. It is important to acknowledge these issues and overcome them together as we determine the course for our country and space for the next few decades. We live in interesting times. We find ourselves at a pivotal point where private enterprise, leveraging off of the foundational and groundbreaking work that the government has been conducting for the last five decades, feels that it understands the risk-reward equation well enough to start engaging in activities in low Earth orbit. But government has a role that it must continue to play in space exploration and utilization. The role of the government is to do the hard things, invest in the research and development the industry cannot, and to take on the tasks and push the boundaries the private sector will not. Our strategy should consider how do we want the U.S. to be leveraged for future roles in space, both in commercial and civil, in low Earth orbit and beyond. It should not be an or, it should be an and. Our plan, our vision needs to be long-term and stable in nature and comprehensive in scope, well thought out and well articulated, and most importantly, fully resourced and executable. And finally, we need to maintain our long-term focused and steadfast commitment to our strategy on the order of a decade or so at a minimum. So the question being addressed today is, can the Mars flyby mission be a candidate for deep space mission for the SLS system? I would say it is certainly one of many possible missions that could result. But once again, let me caution you. Let us not return to the misguided lessons of the past. Any mission chosen cannot be done merely with the mindset of accomplishing a goal without clearly being tied to an overarching strategy. A mission such as the Mars flyby or an asteroid retrieval or a lunar base should be put in the context of the required longer-term strategy. In the context of a coherent strategy, the appropriate missions will be defined logically based on the requirements developed within that strategic framework. The Mars flyby thus can only be discussed in the context of a larger strategy and the associated missions and operational goals. I would like to underscore that any plan, whether its goals are to retrieve an asteroid, establish a lunar base, or send people to Mars, is doomed to failure without the resources to support it. Resources provided in a sustained and a sustainable manner based on realistic projections. NASA has found itself often in a position where it's given tasks to perform but then provided inadequate resources to fulfill them. Failure to adequately resource such large-scale endeavors from the outset inevitably leads to higher costs and inefficiencies. We must have a long-term commitment. Currently, NASA gets about 0.5% of the U.S. budget. If we're going to be a nation that has a future in space, a nation with a strong strategic plan and the will to execute it, 0.5% of the national budget is simply not adequate. The nation has some major budgetary issues to address. I will not deny that. But the heart of our budget problems does not lie in the increasingly small fraction of the budget available to discretionary programs like NASA. I believe a strong, stable, strategically directed, and appropriately resourced space program is vitally important to our country. A sustained national commitment to such a program will not only benefit our country economically, but also will serve as a strong motivation for our young generations to pursue challenging and exciting careers in science, math, and engineering, an intangible benefit, but an important one.
Former astronaut Sandy Magnus, testifying before the Science, Space and Technology Committee of the United States House of Representatives. We shall have the ensuing discussion about the Mars Flyby 2021 proposal on next week's The Space Show. The Space Show is on air every Wednesday between 7 and 8 p.m. This program was researched, edited and presented by Andrew Rennie. And we're going to leave this topic with a bit of a humorous song. It's called First Man on Mars, and it's by Jack Fothery.
Woo! Goodness gracious, we gone to Mars!
Something in his pocket. Mr. Purple People, he's a born deal fine. online all the time at southernfm.com.au.